going to Grueling Truth Sports Network. The NFL show is brought to you, as always, by Manscaped.com. Check them out. Promo code TGT20 for 20% off your first purchase and free shipping. I am your host for the NFL show, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, who got out of Clemson just in time, Sam Teets. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing all right. Neither of my teams won this weekend, obviously, so I'm a little disappointed. And that Clemson game was just awful.
Well, at least your team didn't give it away to Georgia in the final minute because they wouldn't run the clock down and then just run the freaking ball. But what the hell? All right, let's go to a man who's happier because he's an Indianapolis Colts fan. Welcome in 1981 national champion with the Indiana Hoosiers, Steve Risley. How you doing, Steve?
Morning, gentlemen.
All right, let's go ahead and let's get started. We'll talk about everybody that got fired here in a little bit because I don't think there's any surprises so far. Let's start off yesterday. The Cleveland Browns made the playoffs for the first time since 2002. That year, they got beat by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs, blew a huge lead to Tommy Maddox right before Ben Roethlisberger got there. But for the Browns, nothing's ever easy. And with the Steelers play with a lot of second stringers, the Browns got through, Sam.
Yeah, they won, I think, 24-22, I believe was the final score. So it's not like they won by a lot. I'm kind of sick, though, of seeing the Browns fans brag like they actually beat a starting team on something that they didn't. There was no Ben Roethlisberger. You played Mason Rudolph and Josh Dobbs out there for a few snaps. There was no T.J. Watt. There's no Cameron Hayward. Those are arguably the most three important players on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They didn't play, and the Browns won by 2 points because there's a bad – well, not a bad call, but a bad throw on a two-point conversion from Pittsburgh. So, really, the Browns can't get the rematch in the wild card round. I think Pittsburgh has to feel confident going into this game, considering – what they just did with a bunch of backups.
Well, you had to feel good because Pittsburgh, even though they suck, gets to play the Cleveland Browns, who are terrible. Plus, with the Cleveland Browns history, we know this probably isn't going to turn out well for him, Steve.
Yeah, I agree, and I agree with everything Sam said. This was no indication of where these two teams stack up against each other. And I think we're going to find out pretty quickly next weekend the separation between these two franchises right now. Good for Cleveland. They made the playoffs after, 18 long years, ended that streak, and that's all good. But I agree with Sam. They're kind of acting like they just won a Super Bowl when all they did was get themselves in the playoffs. And they did it in a backhanded way. I mean, I feel bad for Miami, who Buffalo shows up pretty much with their starting five intact when the game means nothing to Buffalo for all intents and purposes. And yet, you know, Cleveland comes in and heck, I think half those guys, Sam, didn't even make the trip, did they? Roethlisberger didn't even get on the plane.
Roethlisberger wasn't even on the plane. Didn't even go to the game.
So they wouldn't have played no matter what. So I don't like that in football. I think the fans deserve all players to play. I understand why it happens and it needs to happen because the game is so violent. It just skews a lot of things on the last week when teams are playing to get in and teams are playing for positioning. It's like there ought to be some mandate. You know, you got to play your starters if they're healthy at least half the game or something like that. I don't know how they would do it, Mike, and you're gonna smack me in the face, I know. But
yeah, because it's stupid. How are you going to make them play their starting quarterback?
I know.
Been hurt. I mean, right now, Pittsburgh's set up perfect to go in and beat Cleveland. Mike Honcho says that the Browns will win again, getting two DBs and both safeties back next week, Sam.
Yeah, well, Pittsburgh's getting their starting tight end, Joe Hayden, Ben Roethlisberger, T.J. Watt, and Cameron Hayward back. That's much more important than your two or four DBs. I really couldn't give a damn about the Cleveland Browns and Denzel Ward.
You're getting awful mouthy for a man who just a couple weeks ago's team got smacked by the Bengals on prime time.
That's true, but the Browns did lose to the Jets. So it's not like we're not comparing like gigantic. We're not comparing like this is not the Buffalo.
Yeah, but the Browns had no wide receivers either. And also, I agree with Mike Honcho. Joe Hayden will not be back, which is a problem for Pittsburgh, isn't it? What was that?
Yeah, I think he was on the COVID list, but we'll see if he – I'll check the timeline. He might be get back in time.
Well, you're hoping he is because it's going to be embarrassing for you if you have to come on here after the Cleveland Browns beat your team in the playoffs, especially after all the smack you just talked. That'd be embarrassing for him, wouldn't it, Steve?
I'm in Sam's camp on this one. I think Pittsburgh's going to it's going to be a different outcome. I mean, Pittsburgh is a grinded-out football team. Roethlisberger's got as much playoff experience as any quarterback in the league, slot shy of Brady right now. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be anywhere near the same. I'd be surprised if it's not a double-digit victory for Pittsburgh.
All right, we will get to picking that game on Friday.
Yeah.
I might have a different opinion. Sure. Derrick Henry made history yesterday at a shootout, going for over 2,000 yards once again. And, you know, Sam.
What history did he make?
Well, he ran for over 2,000 yards.
The eighth player to do that. That's history?
No, the history is if you look at
what he did. Did he take a crap in blue shoes while
doing it? You know what? If you'd shut the hell up and pay attention, you'd learn something.
It's not history. He's the eighth player to do it.
Sam, tell him what history Derrick Henry made.
Well, he was the, I believe, fifth player in NFL history to repeat as the Triple Crown, rushing attempts, rushing touchdowns, and rushing yards. I believe he was one to do that. Jim Brown was one of the other ones who's done it. So you can say fifth and eighth, that doesn't matter. At the same time, fifth and eighth all time in NFL history, that's pretty good for a running back. It's pretty good for anyone.
Oh, no, it's good, but I mean, we throw the word history around like he just did it. And there's other guys that have done it too. So he joins an elite group of players who have done it. He didn't make history. It's already been done.
Bullshit.
History's already been made.
This is the problem here, Steve, because that he didn't make history by doing it.
No, he joined an elite group of players who have done it.
So he made history.
No, he joined an elite group of players.
Which means he made history.
Well, if you want to define history that way, then...
Well, how would you define
it? Go rip down some rebel flags.
Well, I don't know what a rebel flag's got to do with it, but Sam, go ahead.
No, I don't think it counts as history. I mean, let me put it this way. If there have been 32 starting running backs in the NFL, they each have attempted to go for 2,000 yards every year. Just over the past 20 seasons, that would have been their 640 attempts by running backs to go for 2,000 yards in the past 20 years. How many times has that resulted in 2,000-yard seasons? Maybe three or four times in the past 20 years, and eight times in history. And the NFL's been going now. They've had Super Bowls for over 50 years at this point.
Well, and they've had history since 1919 or 1920, right?
Yeah.
And it's been going for quite a while. And eight guys have done it.
Yeah.
Which means he joins an elite group of players.
Yeah, who all made history, correct?
No. One made history. The first one that did it made the history. Everybody else joined the guy that made history. Hey, move on. We're debating apples and oranges here. Go on.
Yeah, because you're a moron. Next up, Deshaun Watson.
And you're a dumbass.
Yeah,
I'd rather be a moron than a dumbass.
Well, I would rather be sitting all the way in California and be able to flap your gums instead of being in Indiana where I'd smack the shit out of you. I would say I would smack the taste out of your mouth, but if you got COVID, that would happen anyways. So what I would say is this. I would say Derrick Henry belongs in the MVP conversation. I think it should be Aaron Rodgers 1, Josh Allen 2, Derrick Henry 3.
I agree.
No, I agree. Those are the three I would have on the ballot now. I don't think it's a quarterback or another quarterback that's really qualified. You could say maybe Patrick Mahomes, but honestly, Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers have separated quite a bit to me. And Derrick Henry is carrying Tennessee into the playoffs right now. He deserves to be in that MVP debate.
Yeah, so do we say that he made history by being – in our top three?
Yes, he made the history of this show.
Okay.
Plus, the fact is this. It is debatable that, you know, if the quarterback position wasn't so inflated, Derrick Henry had the best year. You know, people have done what Aaron Rodgers have done. You know, people have done what Derrick Henry did, but a lot less have done what Derrick Henry did.
He wasn't even the leading rusher in the league yesterday.
Huh?
He wasn't even the leading rusher in the league yesterday.
Okay, so who had more than 2,000 yards?
No, I said yesterday, not for the season.
Who had the most rushing yards yesterday?
Taylor, 253.
Okay,
got him by 3 yards. That made history. He's the first player to outrun Derrick Henry. That's history.
Actually, it's not, because there's been multiple guys run for more than 253 yards in a game.
Colt.
I think the
not a Colt. He set the single game rushing record for the Colts. That's history.
Nobody cares about the Colts. They're not even Indianapolis's team. We've went through this. They're a bastard version of the Baltimore Colts.
And you don't claim the Bungles either as your team.
Well, see, this is the thing. I don't sit here and make fun of your team's name just to make myself feel better.
I don't feel better about it. I like the Bengals. Yeah. I picked them to win this week.
Yeah.
You didn't.
And they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I was right and you were wrong.
All right, move on.
Okay. Deshaun Watson led the NFL in passing on a 4-12 team with over 4,800 yards, Sam. That should at least put him in the top 10, shouldn't it, for the NFL MVP? And I think it puts him as one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
We're talking about the MVP. I would think he's probably maybe that fifth guy in. And we're saying if Mahomes is four or Mahomes is five, I think 10. Watson has to be the other one.
Hey, Watson had a better year than Mahomes.
If you're saying that, I would say Watson should be top. If you're saying that, I think Watson should be top five in MVP voting then. Consider what he's working with that team, considering what he's working with that organization, everything Bill O'Brien did to put them in a hole. Then Roman Grinnell is your head coach for the rest of the year. And Watson's done nothing but play hard, try to get his team a win. And you watch that game, they were tied with 18 seconds left. They should have gone to overtime and given Deshaun Watson a chance, but Houston's defense fell apart, and then the Titans got a game-winning field goal in 18 seconds. So I think Deshaun Watson deserves a lot of credit he's done with this terrible team.
All right, next up, the Philadelphia.
Whoa, I don't get a comment.
I thought you did comment. Go ahead.
None of the Sean Watson. I don't think he would be in the candidacy for MVP because I think that entails as the most valuable player, you're leading your team to victory. And you're winning games for your team. You're doing the intangibles as well as the tangibles. What I do think that Derrick Henry should walk away with is offensive player, or not Derrick Henry, Deshaun Watson would be offensive player of the year. I think that guy is one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the league right now, watching him play. And offensive player of the year, I don't know there's a quarterback doing it much better than him, other than maybe Rodgers and Mahomes.
Josh Allen's better than
Josh
him.
Allen and Brady. Mahomes. Yeah, and Josh Allen and Brady. You know, then you got to throw Watson right in that mix. So,
all right, last night, the Eagles. Did they tank that game, Steve?
Boy, I in watching the game, I didn't look at it from that perspective. But then I read all the stuff this morning. No, I don't think they tanked the game. What kind of improvement did it give them in their draft pick?
From 9 to 6. I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know. The bigger shock to me is going with Sunbowl over Wentz. Is Wentz injured?
No, Jalen Hurts
didn't play him.
They didn't play him. He didn't want to be activated because I think he wants the hell out of there, Sam. My question here is this. Jalen Hurts gets benched for Nate Sudfeld. Why? I mean, you've had Nate Sudfeld for four years. If you ever thought he could do it, you'd have put him in by now.
Yeah. And I think Doug Peterson's comments after the game were like, we've had him on the roster for a long time. We wanted to give him snaps. This is like a high school game. This is not like his senior year or something like that. We're going to throw him out on the field for some feel-good snaps at the end of the game. No, I mean, you got to play the quarterback that gives you the best chance to win. That's Jalen Hurts, even though he made a lot of mistakes in the game, which is understandable. He's been making mistakes the past couple. Like, switching Nate Sudfeld to me, that doesn't – I don't understand. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I knew they weren't going to play a lot of their best players coming into the game. So I kind of understood they wanted me to trade some of those guys in the offseason or maybe just to have them healthy for next year. I just don't understand switching quarterbacks. To me, that doesn't make any sense.
I'll throw you my 2 cents worth. We talked about it last week. The shit is all fixed. Alex Smith, if you remember, is the comeback play. He's the feel-good story. Ron Rivera is the coach that had cancer. The NFL needs them in the playoffs.
The NFL doesn't need really a team from the NFC East in the playoffs.
Yeah, they do, because this is the thing. There's no story with the Cowboys. There's no story with the Giants other than they suck and they got in. All we're going to see all week is how Ron Rivera battled cancer. Alex Smith almost died. And now they're in the NFL playoffs. They made this game the main game Saturday night, correct?
So, but they were expecting this to actually be a competitive game, to have real players in the field, not the third stringers.
But what I'm saying is the playoff game, they have put as the primetime game, I believe.
Oh, did they?
So, I mean, why would you make that the primetime game with a below 500 team going against a hot Tom Brady? Now your story is this. Instead of the New York Giants, who suck, playing against, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, well, you've got the quarterback that almost died, the coach that beat cancer, going against Tom Brady. I mean, this shit makes sense to me. And, I mean, it makes no sense to me why you would pull Jalen Hurts, because let's face it, Jalen Hurts hadn't even been there for a year. He's played 3 or 4 games, and you got to make a decision between him and Carson Wentz. Why wouldn't you want to see what Jalen Hurts does in the fourth quarter of this game? And none of it makes sense to me.
No, you're right about that. None of it does make sense. That's the issue. I think that's why everyone's tearing apart Doak Peterson today. Is why, I mean, playing, you get nothing out of playing Nate Sudfeld. You know what Nate Sudfeld is. He's been there for 4 years. So you get nothing out of doing this. I don't understand.
Steve, any opinion?
I would agree with Sam. I didn't look at the game. I was excited because Sudfeld is an IU grad. So, hey, cool. IU quarterback coming in the game. So I was kind of excited about that. You'd see at least see one IU quarterback play good this week.
Hey, and how about this real quick for Giants fans that want to bitch about this and the Giants players? Shut the hell up. You were 6-10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were 7-9, you'd have won it.
Mike, I understand we're going to go at this. I just still have not bought into the conspiracy theory that the NFL rigs games.
I know, because you haven't bought into it for 3 years when it continually happens.
Yeah. Well, I show me the money.
Well, I just showed you. You see the money all the time, TV ratings.
It's bad coaching decisions by a coach who lost his job immediately after the game. So,
did Doug Peterson get fired, Sam?
No, he's not been fired.
Well, he will be fired.
I don't know about that.
He's on the chopping block.
I don't know. Sam, what are the rumors right now with Doug Peterson?
It sounds like he's going to come back. It sounds like Carson Wentz is the more likely quarterback or more likely member of this duo to be pushed out. So it sounds like Wentz has a better chance of getting traded than Doug Peterson of getting fired.
Wentz is coming to the Colts to go back with Frank.
Yeah, he can go back with Frank. They're still not going to win anything.
No, I agree.
Ever. Because Frank's a great offensive coordinator.
That's
next
all
up,
he is. Yeah.
The Green Bay Packers clinch first seed. The Bears back into the playoffs. The Bears played them tough for about 2.5 quarters. It kind of fell apart. The Bears' record is 8-8, correct, Sam?
Yeah, they're 8-8.
All right, so adding an extra playoff team gets us a 500 team and the Cleveland Browns in the playoffs. What the hell did that accomplish? All right, the Green Bay Packers right now, Steve, look like the best team. They're playing really well right now. Aaron Rodgers had maybe the best season he's ever had, and he's nearing 40 years old. So what's your take on the Packers? They have to be a Super Bowl contender. And then what about the Bears?
I think you said it right when, the Bears are a product of that seventh team coming into the playoffs, just allowing one more body to be there. But in a year when fan base is waning because nobody can go to the games, it can't hurt anything. I mean, it's going to be a one and done. It balances everything out. I like the Packers. They're fun to watch. I just don't know if their breadth of depth is what some other teams are, if they've got it all over the place, or it's just Aaron Rodgers having just a monster year, and he's carrying them entirely on his shoulders, truly the MVP of the league. I don't know that, Mike. I mean, you and Sam are better equipped, but I don't know that they're as complete a team as, say, even like a Tampa Bay.
Well, yeah. I think this. I think the problem is in the NFC. I don't know if you have a complete team unless the Saints are completely healthy, which includes Michael Thomas playing. Plus, Drew Brees and, his coach there have a tendency to, for lack of a better term, kind of crap their pants when it gets big time. And with that being said, I mean, the Packers' biggest threat, I think, is the Buccaneers. I think the Packers' defense is very underrated. I think they are better than what they were last year. I think they're really good against the pass. I really like Savage at safety. I think their run defense is a little bit better than last year. The run defense would still worry me, Sam. And the offensive line with David Bakhtiari out would worry me also. So I don't think this is a cakewalk for the Packers. But I think the Packers have to be the favorite going in.
Yeah, I don't think it's a cakewalk for the things you just mentioned. Their run defense has gotten better. I believe they held Derrick Henry to below 100 rushing yards in that game they've matched up against, not this past weekend, but the week before that. So that's obviously a significant improvement they had last year when the Bears ran all over them. My biggest concern going into the playoffs is the David Bakhtiari injury. They're not going to have their star left tackle now. You have to fill in a replacement for that. And that's troublesome when you play a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that have Jason Pierre-Paul, that have Shaq Barrett, or you play the Saints who have Cameron Jordan and Trey Hendrickson. They have these pass rushers. That's going to be a problem for the Packers in those situations, and you're going to have to change your game plans going into those matchups.
All right, next up. the Rams get in as the Cardinals get knocked out. This game was a mess. And the fact that these two teams were vying for a playoff berth will tell you maybe they should cut it to five teams instead of to six or seven, because this was a mess. And I don't think it would have been any better if Jared Goff and a healthy Kyler Murray would have played. I mean, the Rams have a good enough defense to make a run, but the offense, Jared Goff, I don't think has a chance to get this done. I think Seattle busts them out quickly. I think the Cardinals are what the Cardinals are. They have no defense. They have very little offensive line play, Sam. I think these are two teams that have issues. Hell, I would think right now the Bears are better than both of them.
No, I agree. The Bears are certainly hotter than both of them. And Jared Goff might not even play in the wild card round. I mean, he's coming back. He's going to try, obviously, but it's going to be very challenging because he had the dislocation. He had a fracture. So 2 weeks after having surgery for a fracture, you're expecting him to play in the wild card round of the playoffs in a cold weather game. It's going to be tough for the Rams. It's going to be tough for Goff. You might see more John Wolford in the wild card round, in which case I don't see a way the Rams are going to beat Seattle.
I don't think they're going to win him with Jared Goff either. Steve, what do you think?
I agree. I think, like you said, this we're a great case for going to five teams and eliminating it down to five. But, again, it's the playoffs. You never know what's going to happen. Goff could come back and have the game of his lifetime. And, you know, hell could freeze over, too.
No, he could. We've seen him do it before. Next up, the Indianapolis Colts are in the playoffs. They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 28-14. They did not put the game away until the last 3 minutes, though. Jonathan Taylor, I think, is turning into be what Jonathan Taylor we expected him to be, Steve. The worrisome here is it took a long time to pull away from Jacksonville, and that's after jumping out to a big early lead.
Well, they pulled away early. I mean, they got up 20-0 on them, and it looked like it was going to be smooth sailing. But in typical Frank fashion, they went to the stall offense almost in the second half again, and they just slowly let Jacksonville back into this football game to where they were only up 6 points late in the game. I mean, they had a chance to actually lose that game if Jacksonville was able to mount anything. Thing about the Colts are, I mean, comment on this, but Rivers looked atrocious. He didn't look like he could throw the ball past 15 yards. He threw 27 times, but only completed 17 of them for, like, what, 160 yards. The fear on the Colts right now is they've got a tremendous offensive line, especially in the run game right now, and Taylor's playing good football, but that makes them a very one-dimensional football team and very easy to shut down. I don't think the Colts are a threat in the playoffs at all.
Yeah, I don't think they are either. I mean,
I don't think they are. They're one and done. They got to go to Buffalo and play, and it's just a question of not if, it's how bad.
Yeah, and from what we see, we talk about the Bills a little bit. The Bills defensively are on fire too right now, and the Colts, I think, are going into a buzzsaw, Sam.
Yeah, it's going to happen because the Bills have – they rested some of their best guys the other day, and they destroyed the Miami Dolphins. And I want to mention that Philip Rivers took 5 sacks playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Buffalo Bills have a decent and developing pass rush right now. And Rivers isn't going to run away from anybody, so he's going to be sacked 3 or 4 times against Buffalo. He hasn't looked really good the past 2 games in a row now. You're relying mostly on Jonathan Taylor, but the Bills fight on that running game. I just don't see a way that the Colts are going to score with the same amount of points the Buffalo Bills are going to score. The Bills are going to score 30-plus points per game in the playoffs. I don't think Indianapolis can keep pace with them.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I mean, they can barely put 20 points up on the board with Taylor running wild.
And the scary thing right now is this. The Buffalo Bills beat Miami 56-26 yesterday. It was 28-13 at the half, I think. And then Josh Allen came out of the game, and you thought, well, they're going to have a chance to come back, the Dolphins. It wasn't to be. The Dolphins, I mean, just got overrun by the Bills. I don't think it would have mattered if Tua or Ryan Fitzpatrick played in this game. The Buffalo Bills are just that good right now, and especially Josh Allen, because he started the game off with an interception on the first drive. After that, though, he destroyed the Dolphins' defense. They had 28 points by halftime when they brought him out. Allen broke Drew Bledsoe's record for the most passing yards in a single Bills season. And as he was all season, Stephon Diggs is uncoverable. And that's the big issue playing the Bills right now. I think that he's more uncoverable than anybody in football. You watch him get double-teamed, and he still runs in space, Sam.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs has a case for being the best wide receiver in the NFL this year based on what he's accomplished. And that duo of him and Josh Allen, he's really helped bring Josh Allen out of his shell and become an MVP candidate. So this year, I'm just glad Pittsburgh doesn't have to face the Bills in the first round. It won't have to happen until later if Pittsburgh gets that far. Because I don't think there's a way to stop Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs this year. I mean, in the past, countering Josh Allen's been pretty simple, I'll say. You can't do it this year. He's finding a way to overcome these adversity and mistakes he makes early in games.
Yeah, and the other thing here, Steve, is this. The Miami Dolphins defense had a case that they were great all year. They were a top five defense all year. And the Bills did this with Josh Allen and then Matt Barkley. They scored at one point three straight touchdowns with Josh Allen in the second quarter. This is against, I think, arguably the best secondary in football in the Dolphins. This Bills team is scary, and I think that right now the people that laughed at a certain person after week five when he said he thought the Bills were going to beat the Chiefs and go to the Super Bowl, they should all apologize.
Yeah, two things here to point out. I said this pretty much all season about the Colts is their secondary is a big play Ray secondary. They're spectacular. They've gotten a lot of picks. They've caused a lot of turnovers, but they don't do the yeoman's work play after play after play after play. They get their asses handed to them, and then all of a sudden they come up with a big play. If they're not coming up with that big play, Diggs and Josh are going to just tear them to shreds, as you said. Secondly, if the Colts were to win this game, it would be the biggest upset in the NFL this year.
No, it wouldn't. I think the Jets beating the Rams and the Bengals beating the Steelers would be bigger. Okay. Just because those teams suck. And the Colts don't suck.
No, they don't suck. They're not in the same league.
Put it like this. There's as they say in British boxing, there's levels to this. And the Bills are on this level. And the Colts are on this level. The Bengals and the Jets are like way down here.
Yeah, at 11-5, you can make an argument the Colts deserve to be in the playoffs, but
they deserve to be in the playoffs.
They're not a contender for anything beyond being in the playoffs. I'm not dumb enough. The really crappy part is out here, I got to get out of bed Saturday at like 9 o'clock because the damn game is on at 10 o'clock here. So my Colts are going to be the first out in the playoffs.
Yeah,
this is all that's going to happen.
That's how the Bengals were most of those 5 years. They'd put them on first, and they'd be done. All right, the Ravens had a historic day on the ground, over 400 yards rushing against the Cincinnati Bengals, led by that hard-nosed, tough coach, Zach Taylor. This game was an absolute embarrassment. Brandon Allen was absolutely pathetic, which tells us just how bad the Houston Texans defense was, because Brandon Allen goes for a rating of like 130 last week to zero this past week. And, you know, the Bengals did shut down that passing game of Lamar Jackson. He was only 10 for 18. But I don't even know why they threw the ball 18 times, to tell you the truth. I think they could have ran the ball on every down and beaten the Bengals by 30 points, Sam.
No, you're right. I mean, they no answer. Bengals had no answer for what Baltimore is doing. They were constantly gouging out large sums of yards. I mean, J.K. Dobbins averaged 12.3 yards per carry, 13 carries, 160 yards, two touchdowns. Lamar Jackson, 8.8 yards per carry. Gus Edwards, 5 yards per carry. You have the four guys of Dobbins, Jackson, Edwards, Mark Ingram, and you're running those guys constantly. They bring different styles of football to have that trio of running back plus Lamar Jackson. I don't know if there's a defense out there that's built to stop all of that. Not even Pittsburgh, not even Buffalo. I think they could slow it down. But I don't know if you could just shut down entirely. Obviously, the passing game is much more susceptible to failing. But the running game for Baltimore seems pretty strong here late in the season.
So, Steve, what's your take on the Ravens? How dangerous are they? They will play Tennessee next week. So you've got the best running back in football against the best group of runners in football. Is the difference going to be Ryan Tannehill and Lamar Jackson, and who's better?
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be Henry versus Baltimore's defense. Baltimore tends to play hard-nosed, smash-mouth football. They come at you. They hit hard every play. That's just the Harbaugh mentality. You know, you can see that he coaches the same way. And I think it's going to – but I think the quarterbacks are going to determine the outcome of this game. If Tannehill can stay with – or Jackson can stay with Tannehill in the air, which he hasn't shown he can do. But he hasn't needed to either. So let's see what happens with that. I would say – of all the teams that are in the playoffs right now, Baltimore might be the most improved AFC team. It doesn't mean they're the best AFC team. Just they're the most improved of any team that's gotten in and ready to make a run at the playoffs. Well, see, I think they can win.
My take on this is this. When I look at this, the Titans beat Baltimore in Baltimore earlier this year. I don't know if the Ravens are so much improved or their schedule's just been crap at the end of the season. Because once you get, you know, you had the Lamar Jacksonless game against Pittsburgh where they lost. After that, they're playing teams like the Bengals and the Cowboys. But the thing that strikes me is last year, Tennessee dominated Baltimore in the playoffs. And you say, Sam or Steve, that nobody can shut down this running game. But Tennessee did it in the playoffs last year. And in the regular season this year, J.K. Dobbins ran for 70, Lamar Jackson 51, Gus Edwards 6 yards, Mark Ingram 2 yards. This is a team that's had Baltimore's number, and I think that's what makes this game so interesting because right now I don't think the Titans' defense is near as good as it was last year, but the Titans' defense was pretty good the first time they played the Ravens. So does Vrabel have a way to beat the Ravens, Sam?
He probably does. It comes down to, I think, the better question is, does John Harbaugh have a way to beat the Tennessee Titans? Because Harbaugh is a very good coach of his own right. So I think it'll be interesting to see what adjustments he makes. There have to be adjustments from the last game they played this year to this upcoming matchup. I'd argue Tennessee's defense has actually gotten a little bit weaker since that first matchup. They have lost a couple players. So I think there is an opening there. I just don't know if they'll be able to take it. And I think that Tannehill with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown will probably be the difference maker in this game. But Tannehill has had some off games here in the past couple of weeks. It's not like he's a lockdown quarterback every week.
Well, and the thing that gets me here is Derrick Henry, that last game against Baltimore, 28, 133 yards. I think the one big difference that could make the difference in this game is I think Tennessee's offensive line is better than Baltimore's.
Oh, for sure. He's dealt with all the injuries, the retirement of Marshall Yanda. And Tennessee's offensive line, which was a little questionable to begin last season, has really solidified itself as probably, I think, a top five run blocking unit in the NFL.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's move on. Steve, is Tom Brady really 43 years old?
I don't know. Good question.
He sure don't look like it.
I tell you what, his arm doesn't look like it either. I've seen him put some zing on some 30, 40-yard passes that were spot on and threading needles like he was doing when he was 25. He's a freak of nature. He's just a freak of nature at that position. I mean, he looks like he could play another 5 years, which give him realistically means probably another 2 years at that level.
I don't know now. I think we're just going to wait and watch and see what Tom Brady does because this is a different breed than what we have ever seen. I don't think we've ever seen a quarterback play near this level. I don't know how many athletes, Sam, have we seen play at this level this late in the game? Any?
I mean, not many. I think you could probably find a couple of baseball players, but that's because the game is maybe a little less physical in the sense you're not taking hits or something like that.
I don't know if you can find a baseball player for it. Maybe Nolan Ryan?
I know, right? It would be tough. You really – at 43 years old, that's really pushing me here. I don't think there is an athlete playing at this level. I mean, he had 4 touchdowns this year and just 12 interceptions. And this guy's still probably top 5 year for a quarterback in the NFL this year.
He had 45.
I don't think there's ever been anyone in NFL history to have such an impressive season late in their career.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve. Was
he
it 44?
He had 44 touchdowns, actually, I think, didn't he?
That ain't bad.
No, doesn't suck. And he's got Giselle, too.
Well, whatever that means. I don't know. She probably still causes trouble, but she makes a lot of money. All right, next up.
4 times what he makes.
Next up. The New York Giants slipped by the Dallas Cowboys. What was it, 24-19? Yeah, 23-19.
Yeah, please let me look it up real quick. It doesn't really matter. It's just the matter of the fact that Dallas somehow found a way to lose this game against a Giants team that was depleted and suffering injuries. 23-19. Yeah.
Well, the difference here is Dalton was horrible in the first half. He battled back in the second half. Kind of reminded you of Curt Schilling in the 2004 World Series, didn't it, Sam? Where he had the blood on his glove instead with Andy Dalton, it was blood, you know, on his glove. Well, it was blood on the sock for Curt Schilling. But I think Dalton played tough. Mike McCarthy's an idiot, and the Cowboys lost. I think that sums up the Dallas Cowboys' entire season.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, they've had all these opportunities. They've had all these great players. Yet they've never found a way to win the games they should. And I know New York has a strong defensive front. But realistically, Dallas should win this game. Dalton was the highest quarterback in this division coming into this matchup. and he had the struggles in the first half, started pulling it together in the second half, and Dallas still found a way to lose this matchup. I appreciate what Joe Judge has done this season for the New York Giants. They didn't deserve a playoff bid, certainly not, 6 wins. But Dallas, you have to have a lot of questions. They've already said they want Mike McCarthy back for next year, but if I was dealing with the Cowboys right now, I wouldn't be so sure.
Well, calling somebody the hottest quarterback in the NFC East, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like walking in Walmart, looking around and saying, my wife's hotter than all these women.
Good analogy.
It doesn't matter if she's hot or not. She's probably going to be hotter than all the women at Walmart. All right.
Girls of Walmart website somewhere.
We ought to start one. All right. The Seahawks.
About 100 of them.
The Seahawks offense finally exploded in the fourth quarter. But how much concern, Sam, do we have to have with the Seahawks offense? Because the last 5 or 6 games, they haven't been great. They exploded in the fourth quarter here against a bad 49ers team. DK Metcalf broke a 35-year-old mark held by Pro Football Hall of Famer Steve Largent for single-season receiving yards, finishing the game with 1,303 on the year. How much worry is there with the offense? Because it seems that Seattle's defense has gotten better, and the offense has become the detriment on this team.
No, the defense has definitely gotten better. Everything from the pass rush, the coverage, it's gotten much better. It might be crazy, but it might be the Seattle Seahawks defense that hurried them past the Los Angeles Rams next week. Because Russell Wilson has not played consistently well in the past couple of games. The offense is not consistently there. They only put up 20 to the Rams last week, then 20 against Washington, against the Jets, but obviously they should have that. 12 against the Giants, 23 against the Eagles. There have been a lot of issues here the past 6 or 7 weeks at this point. They're not scoring what they used to. They're not throwing the ball downfield as much, or at least not hitting those passes. I think there's a major concern here regarding Seattle's offense.
Yeah, and I think this, Steve, when we look at that, I think it is all a direct correlation with the offensive line. Their offensive line is horrible.
Yeah, thank God that Wilson can scramble and run and move around in the pocket like he can and throw the accuracy he does on the run. But I don't think the game against the Rams is a throwaway game for Seattle at all. I think it's going to be a very tight football game between those two franchises. If Goff does come back, his ability to play may be the factor, really, even more so than Russell Wilson, because I agree with you guys, both assessments. Wilson's just kind of been all over the map. He's looked like an MVP, and he's come around and looked like, holy cow, who's next in line? But I'm not sure that's all his fault.
I don't think it is his fault. There have been too many years where he played great to assume that this is his fault. Right. And also, when you've got him, you never know when he's going to go off, and the time to go off is usually the playoffs, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
All right, let's go ahead and let's look at some other games. We've got the Chargers beat the Chiefs JV team. The Saints smacked the Panthers. The Jets' win streak is over. The Vikings win a shootout, and the Raiders win. Who the hell cares? All right, so we went through all of that. I don't want to talk about any of those. What I do want to talk about is this. Who should be the Offensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL? Sam?
So, it's not going to be Burrow because he's only played what half the season. He played 8 or 7 games. So, if we take Burrow out of the equation because of injuries, the two guys we're really, well, 3 guys I should say we're left standing with are probably Jonathan Taylor, Justin Jefferson, and Justin Herbert. Unless there's someone you're looking at that I haven't seen yet. Tristan Wirfs could be up there, but they're never going to play, they're never going to pick an offensive lineman.
Now, to me,
it's Justin Jefferson.
To me, it's between 2 guys. So, Steve, what do you think?
I would agree with Sam in terms of who it is. I like Herbert a lot, and you can't ignore what Taylor's done. Although he's got still arguably the best offensive line running, especially on the run game, to run behind. But he's made the most of it. I mean, when you're ripping off 50-yard runs, you're getting a lot of that on your own because you're out running people, and you're finding holes in the secondary and things like that. So Taylor or Herbert would be my 2 choices. One of
really?
Those.
Really? I think they're 2nd and 3rd. I think Justin Jefferson should be the offensive player of the year.
All right.
So what you got here is this. You've got Jonathan Taylor, 232 carries, 1,169 yards, 11 touchdowns. Justin Jefferson, 88 receptions, 1,400 yards, 7 touchdowns, average 16 yards per catch. You got Justin Herbert, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 4,300 yards, a QBR of 69.7. When I look at that, to me, Justin Jefferson stands out the most to me.
When he smashed the rookie single season receiving yards record that was held by Anquan Boldin. And I know we're talking about, yes, they're throwing the ball more and more now, but that record's been on the books for almost 20 years at this point, for probably more like 15 years. So it's been a while. And Jefferson coming out, and his increasing snaps and increasing play was a direct correlation with Minnesota starting to win football games. We forget how bad they were being there. They were like 1-5 or 1-6 at some point. But when Justin Jefferson got more involved in that offense, they started turning the year around, and Kirk Cousins started turning his season around. So I think you can see his impact. He has a larger impact on this offense than I believe people may recognize.
Well, to me, Steve, it would be Jefferson 1. It would be Herbert 2. I think they are both deserving. I think Herbert's had a great year. But Jefferson, to me, as Sam said, I think that if the Vikings would have used him the first 4 games of the season, I mean, he would have had well over 100 receptions, and I think he made a huge impact on that Vikings team coming back and winning games. I think Herbert did a great job. Jonathan Taylor, to me, I mean, the first half of the season kind of killed him to me. Didn't do a whole hell of a lot. Plus, I think it hurts him that Pittsburgh Steeler game with only the 74 yards. Because when you look at his stats, 253 against Jacksonville, then 74, 83, 150 against Vegas, 91 against Houston. I don't see a lot of consistency, and I see a lot of like Jacksonville 253 games, you know, defenses that aren't that great. So I'm not looking at the entirely. Let's go look at it all here.
I can tell you this. Jonathan Taylor in the past 6 games had 741 of his yards. So the vast majority of his yardage came in the past 6 games. Prior to that, he wasn't doing much of anything. He had one big game.
And you could argue that that's a time when the Colts were making a run for the playoffs. So he puts his stats on the board when they matter.
Well, he put his stats on the board. He ran for 90 yards against the Packers, little under 4 yards.
The Colts won that game.
Yeah, but I don't think it was because they ran the ball so well. Houston, well,
they didn't need to. That's when Rivers was still throwing the ball more than 5 yards downfield.
Houston 90. All I can tell you is this. In those last 6 games, the only playoff team that they played was Pittsburgh, and he was 18 for 74. You know, and this is the thing. They win the division.
See what the average yardage gained by running backs is against Pittsburgh individually. And we don't need to. I'm not making a plea for Justin Taylor. I would agree. In that race, he's 3rd. I would agree. I have no problem with it whatsoever. The only thing is, Herbert, remember, played this entire season that he played in a massive coaching controversy. Whether their coach is going to get shit-canned any given week. You know, and he finally did the day after the last game of the season. So to be a rookie quarterback, put those kind of numbers on the board, and to get your team starting to win again, get that feel, a little unity and concept going on, with a strong coaching controversy going on, I think bodes for some consideration as well. But your argument for Minnesota's receiver, certainly can't argue with that. Those are big numbers. Those are historic numbers.
Are you sure, Steve?
I'm sure.
They are historic. So they is are. Justin Herbert's, though. So this is my breaking point.
I don't think he broke any of John Adel's records.
Actually, Justin Herbert, I guarantee you, threw for more yards this season than John Adel probably did in 2 seasons.
Did he? Okay.
Probably. I don't think the Chargers were really good when John Adel was there, were they?
No. Okay, no. I'll go back to Philip Rivers. I don't know that he broke any of Philip Rivers' records.
Yeah, he did, because he threw for more yards than any rookie quarterback ever.
Well, I think Rivers was a rookie when Adel was still playing.
I don't think he was.
No, I'm teasing.
I know. John Adel, here you go. This is a comparison. John Adel had 2 seasons over 3,000 yards.
Yeah.
34, 73, and 68, 3,075, and 71. So.
Good old Air Coryell.
No, it wasn't. But.
Adel wasn't part of Air Coryell?
No. John Adel. That was Dan Fouts. Well, no, Air Coryell actually started with the Cardinals and Jim Hart in 72, 73. They were terrible. They brought Air Coryell in. They had guys like Terry Metcalf, Roger Worley, and they made the playoffs back-to-back years in 74 and 75 or 75 and 76. Coryell left. John Adel was traded, I think, after the 72 season to the Rams. And really, he didn't do a whole hell of a lot after that. I think he did start in Green Bay and then in Houston. Yeah, Fouts was Eric Coryell in San Diego, because when Eric Coryell got there, I think it was in 76 or 77. Hadle had been gone since 72, because Hadle went and quarterbacked the Rams in 73. I'm not 100% sure, but I think Hadle was the NFL MVP in 1973 with the Rams. They went 12-2.
Did Hadle start in San Francisco?
No. Hadle started with San Diego in the old AFL in the early 60s. Sid Gilman would have been his coach. And Sid Gilman was probably – he was the precursor to the West Coast offense. And the interesting thing there is Don Coryell was an assistant coach with Sid Gilman. I think Joe Gibbs was at one point too. So all those guys came from the Sid Gilman coaching tree. And those Chargers teams won the AFL championship, I think, in 64, lost in like 65 to the Bills, something like that. But they were always good somewhere around 9-4, 8-3. And then Sid Gilman left. Yeah, you had Lance Allworth, which is Hadle's main.
Number 19.
Yes, he was. And Bambi was one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game. But yeah, Hadle went to 73 with the Rams and had a great season. And then I think the Rams, for some reason, he was the MVP, and the Rams traded him to Green Bay. And they got a lot from Green Bay for it. It was one of the bigger steals in NFL history. And then, you know, Hadle didn't do much. I think Hadle started for the Packers in like 75 or 76, but they had a losing record and were horrible. And then he started a few games when Bud Phillips got to Houston. The Oilers traded for him. But he started games just because Dan Pastorini was hurt, which happened a lot. But I think he only started like 5 or 6 games in 2 years, and then he retired. But that's the history of John Hadle.
Number 21 in your program.
And number 1 in your heart, Steve.
There you go.
All right. Tomorrow, Sam, what are we doing? We ranking the 12 NFL
playoffs. NFL quarterback power rankings that Steve hates so much.
So are we just doing the quarterbacks that are left? Just quarterbacks?
I was going to do quarterbacks. I was doing like a seasonal recap, like a full season recap.
All right. So.
You going to talk about coaches? You going to save that for later on in the week?
What about coaches? I think this. I don't think
Anthony. We lost three yesterday. We lost Gase, Lynn, and
Marone.
Well, Gase should have never been hired. Marone should have never been hired. But at least Marone had the 1 year we were into the championship.
Lynn, I thought, would hang on. I thought Lynn might hang on for another year.
I think Lynn should keep his job. In 4 years, he's made the playoffs twice. He's 2 games over .500. They went 7-9 this year. You've got the quarterback in the future. You were missing Derwin James. You missed Bosa part of the year. I think Anthony Lynn may possibly even be a head coach next year somewhere else. I think he's a good football coach. I thought they would fire him. I don't think they should. I can tell you this, if Anthony Lynn could come be the coach for the Bengals, I would take that over Opie Taylor any day.
Maybe he'd be an improvement in a lot of places right now.
Yeah, I think Anthony Lynn's a good football coach.
Then you've got Nagy, Peterson, and Fangio on the hot seats right now, allegedly.
So what do you think is going to happen with Fangio, Sam?
I heard they want him back. I heard they're going to bring him back for another year, but I'm not a believer – and what they have right now, they're going to turn this around another year. I think this is going to take another 2 or 3 years to turn this thing around, especially with the way the quarterback situation looks right now. Because apparently they're not moving on from Drew Lock either.
Well, they need to move on. They need to move on from John Elway, because that's the problem. Yeah. It's not Vic Fangio. It wasn't any coach before that. This is his fault. I mean, if
that's not going to happen.
Well, no, it's Denver, and he's, you know, it's like Cincinnati is the Brown family, so they can do whatever the hell they want.
Right.
I mean, but as the letter Mike Brown put out to season ticket holders today in his statement, the Bengals are moving in the right direction.
They keep their quarterback healthy.
They won 2 games last year. They won 4 games this year. Next year, they'll win 6. The year after, they'll win 8. 3 or 4 years from now, they might make the playoffs.
There you go. And you'll bitch about something.
Yeah, I will, because you got to win the Super Bowl or it don't count.
There you go.
So, all right. Anything else we want to talk about, Steve or Sam?
Nope.
Nope. Then we got all the news we needed to.
All right. We'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow to talk NFL quarterbacks. So make sure you come back. Come back for sure, because Steve won't be here.
I might. I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Well, you can come back if you want. We'll see.
I don't know that I want.
Well, we don't know that we want you, Steve. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. Make sure you check us out on Rockfin. Make sure you go check out manscaped.com. Promo code TGT20 for 20% off your first purchase and free shipping. But for now, for Steve Risley, Sam Teets, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening and watching to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.